The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi.
Hi.
By the way, I'm trying your soda pop that you get me there.
Yeah, I got you
the orange vanilla. It tastes like
orange vanilla Coke Zero.
Tastes like a creamsicle.
Yeah, right. I think that's the idea.
This might go well with vodka.
Remember the Orange Whips or Orange Julius that you used to get in the mall? Remember
malls? Oh, yes, I love
it. Those under the age of 90. A mall was a large building.
Where we used to shop.
Yeah, where you could shop all under one roof. Somebody 20 years later, 20 years down the road from now, they're going to go, you know what we should do? We should build a huge building where all the stores can be under one roof.
It's the only way to fight Amazon.
Yeah.
Or an Amazon mall.
Nope, because I still have to carry it to my door myself.
That's true. Won't work.
I would prefer someone else do that. I'm still trying to convince them to bring it all the way in, get it out of the box, put the batteries in it, try it out.
Real lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, the pizza guy can come to the door. He can't come all the way to the sofa. The door's open.
By the way, I'm thinking. I'm not going to pull the trigger, but I'm thinking.
About?
OLED TVs have come down in price.
Hmm. Yeah, they'll continue to do that. See, I'm always watching. I will buy. It finally dropped down to, yeah, but there's always a $2,000 TV.
exactly.
What is it that I saw the other day? There was a $60,000 TV. It's massive.
Is that the one you can put up just on your wall in components?
I don't think so. I think this was all one piece. But it's so huge. Now, my brother-in-law has a really big TV. I forget how big it is, but it's huge. It's massive. It takes up the wall of their entire basement.
Yeah.
An entire wall. And the problem is, according to my sister, you can't get the TV. I mean, you can't get the couch back far enough. So watching TV often becomes like a tennis match.
No, that's a problem. I have, once every 3 or 4 years, I'll experience vertigo. I'll be walking somewhere and all of a sudden it's like, whoa. My buddy has a 65-inch one that's on his wall. Whenever I go visit him in New York, I'm still amazed. Like, wow.
Yeah.
That's really big. One time he had a football game on, and I said, your TV is so big that I believe that player's helmet is bigger on the TV screen than it is in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
I'll never forget seeing it. Now, and he is now 55 and 65 inch. If they're not OLED, you can pick up for $500-$600.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The smart TVs are even lower. I mean, one department store had a sale recently on the 4K smart TV, like the Amazon version, as a 50 inch.
Yeah.
But it was like three something. And if you didn't want the 4K, you just got the HD, which, you know, 1080.
Right.
It was like 200.
Yeah.
It was a sale.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you think, I mean, those TVs 15 years ago would have been $7,000. No, they would have been $10,000.
I remember my dad paid a pretty penny. It was several hundred dollars or more for a 40 inch.
Yeah.
Years ago.
I can't remember how much I paid for mine 12 years ago. And it would have been, it's a 42-inch. Mm-hmm. And it's still a great TV.
But
it's just, I've been watching for the last, since OLEDs came out, I've been watching, okay, when will I pull the trigger? When will, and it, you know, they were 4,000, then 3,000, then 2,500, then 2,000, then 1,500, and now the 55-inch has reached right at the 1,000 mark. And I went, oh, that just happened in the last month, because they were 1,600, 1,700, all of a sudden down to 1,000. And I, you know, went and checked it out, and it's like, yep, they've all come down right now. Not the newer models, but last year's model. And it's like, okay. And then I turn on my TV at home a couple of days ago, and I was thinking about it. And the Golf Channel was on. It was a golf tournament. I'm like, well, my TV's still really good. I really don't need one. But
yeah,
you don't really need a great TV. You want a great TV.
Right.
But yeah, it gets to the point, you and I have always talked about this, no matter how much money I ever make, I could be a billionaire, and I would still look at something and say, no, it's not worth it. How much money I have doesn't change that perceived, or the value of what I put to something out there. Well, we could continue this. We had this topic on capitalism versus socialism over the last couple of days, and the galactic socialism, galactic communism of the Ocasio-Cortez interview, where they were talking about Star Trek socialism, where everything's attained to value. But I do that to everything. Is it worth that price? Is it worth it? Now, my phone, and I have a Note 9, was quite expensive. But still, it's worth it because I use it every single day. I mean, it's more of a necessity having a good smartphone for the job that you do, for the convenience of it.
I don't know what the demand for TVs is right now and where the numbers are, but the demand is dropping because you have younger people.
Yep.
When they cut the cord, they often, because I was next to a young couple that was sharing headphones, watching their tablet on a movie on their tablet on a flight recently. And they made a comment to somebody else that, yeah, this is actually our TV at home, too. When we watch TV, because we don't have cable, we just watch this. So whether it's a laptop, a tablet, or even a phone, going out and paying $1,000 or $2,000 for a TV, when you really don't get that much out of it, and you're okay with watching it on a much smaller device, that lowers the demand. I don't know where that demand is right now, but we know what's going on with cutting the cord, the whole thing. In fact, there is at least one major cable company, if not all of them by now, but one that is offering, okay, get our internet service. You don't even have to get our cable. Get our internet service. And what we'll do is we'll include like 30 channels. And I don't know if that's one tier or if it's a la carte, if you can choose up to 30 or what it is. But I just saw the advertisement the other day. You don't have to have cable. Just get our internet. Because with many of the logins of the apps or watching anything online, if you go to a whatever it is, a CBS.com or Fox.com, they often require you to have a cable login.
Yes.
Well, this allows you to have the cable login, and all you have to do is subscribe to the internet service. So it's changing. They know it's changing.
See, I can't justify the cost of an OLED because I only want it for one thing. And it's coming up here in the next month, and it's the Masters. I want to see the azaleas out at Augusta Country Club. And I want a 65-inch OLED that really doesn't fit anywhere in my house.
Right.
I don't have a wall. I don't have anything that would, but I would like to rent one for $100 just for that weekend, put it into my house, drop it down where I want it. I can watch the Masters and then take it back. Oh, by the way, it's not the 65-inch that's at 1,000. It's the 55-inch that is hit the $1,000 mark in OLEDs, which still, when I look at my house and I look at the, I've got a 42-inch, and I'm looking, I'm going, okay, that's about all that really fits there. I mean, there's no place in my house to put a big TV. How stupid was I when I designed my house? Because I really designed it. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
I didn't think about having a monstrosity of a 65, 75, 85-inch television screen in the house.
Our living room, we're actually in the process of redesigning it to become essentially a theater, a small theater.
Oh, okay.
And we have an entire wall. But I probably couldn't fit my brother-in-law's TV on it. I'd have to go, I'd have to make room on another wall. I'd have to build in a window, you know, or something crazy. But it is, I don't watch television. I watch, you know, things on Netflix and Amazon, and then I have a subscription to the apps for sometimes HBO or Showtime because I've got a couple of shows that I watch there. But I don't watch the television. I don't turn it on and start going through the channels unless there's breaking news. And in that case, I'm going straight to whatever it is, CNN or Fox News or, you know, who's got the latest, and I'm going back and forth there. But I just don't watch TV.
And I really don't need a 65-inch OLED TV to watch MASH reruns, do I?
Well, I mean, the screen on my laptop is excellent, and I can watch anything on my laptop.
On my phone.
Yeah.
Screen on my phone, because I'm watching basketball games on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like amazed. Now, it's only a five-inch phone, mm-hmm. whatever, five-inch diagonal, mm-hmm. or 5.7-inch diagonal screen, but
right.
still the clarity is, I think it's an OLED screen on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really crystal clear.
You know, they designed a lot of this stuff for gamers. Gamers spend a lot of money. They spend a ton of money on their TV, on their internet speed, and they really invest heavily into it. Then when you think about, like, the graphics, you know, we forget that these game companies, the gaming companies, they hire celebrities to do the voices. They pay big money when it comes to production of it can rival some of the big Hollywood movies in terms of overall production costs. Well, if you're going to do that, there's going to be a demand, of course, on the other end, and there already is for that hardware, you know, to view it on. And it's those new televisions. And those gamers who sit around and they invest heavily into that, both time and money. That's it. It's not about movies or anything else.
I need to find a gamer friend just to go over to their house and see the setup, because I've never seen a setup of a true gamer.
Right.
And I would find it fascinating for one day
mm-hmm.
just to see it, and then
show me the difference. Show me.
Let me
show
see what
me
you do,
what,
and then I'm done. I don't want to be there every day because it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, I've never been into gaming, but I would like to see how the graphics are different on this version of a TV versus an older version.
And I have no idea what games are playing, so it would be interesting to see that, too.
Yeah.
So I could do it for a day just for educational purposes only.
It's a huge industry. Huge industry. A lot of money.
So do I want an OLED or do I want new clubs?
I would go for the clubs.
I can't have both. But I'm getting old, Eric.
But the TV is doing nothing. Exactly.
The
all the more reason to get the clubs.
866-90-RED-EYE.
You may not be able to predict blizzards and ice storms, but you can prepare your truck to handle them. Make sure your truck is prepared for any last-minute winter storms by keeping tabs on your tires before each trip. Proper tire traction is essential year-round, but especially during winter when the roads are slick and roadway behavior is unpredictable. Protect your tire investment with routine checks and pre-trip inspections all winter long. Check pressure levels, tread depth, and inspect for any visible damage or debris stuck in wheel components. Look for steam or melted snow coming off wheel hubs, as this could indicate your wheel bearings are overheating. If necessary, give your tires a warm wash before inspecting them, as snow can cover potential warning signs of damage. If you need any tire assistance, stop into a TA truck service near you and speak to one of our TA certified tire experts.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up.
Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. More coming out and telling Ocasio-Cortez your ideas are cray-cray. There's the AFL-CIO slamming the Green New Deal. In a letter to Green New Deal originators, AOC and Senator Ed Markey, AFL-CIO representatives wrote that the proposal is not achievable or realistic. Quote, we will not accept proposals that could cause immediate harms to millions of our members and their families. We will not stand by and allow threats to our members' jobs and their families' standard of living go unanswered, said Cecil Roberts, president of the United Mine Workers of America, and Lonnie Stevenson, president of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. The Green New Deal does not offer sufficient support for labor unions with its sweeping changes that would affect United States infrastructure and industry, according to the AFL-CIO.
Yeah, you're not going to get there.
AOC is anti-union.
AOC, AFL-CIO, got to work that out. Okay. And you too. It's not that difficult.
Now the unions are saying, the leftist unions, it is not achievable or based in reality.
Claire McCaskill is pacing in her kitchen floor right now going, I told you. I told you.
Yeah.
I told you.
She really is.
I told you.
She's the one who brought crazy Democrats.
Well, and we asked the question yesterday, how widespread is that sentiment right now with Democrats, with a Governor Cuomo, with a Joe Biden, and with others that are looking at it going, you know, we really can't cross that bridge. We really, because once you do, if the more you empower Ocasio-Cortez, the more power you're going to give up. It's over for you. You're the old guard. You're going to be done. But the party itself can't get back to proposing ideas because there's no way to have a debate. Everybody talks about when she's old enough to run for president, will she run? She might run. But keep in mind, there's going to be a debate. There's going to be a number of debates. She's going to have to partake in those debates.
Let me ask you this question. Could Maxine Waters run for president of the United States and win?
No.
I'm making this point because if you saw Ocasio-Cortez yesterday making statements and asking questions of the CEO of Wells Fargo, mm-hmm. She came off like a nutcase.
Yeah, she did.
And I make that same thing against Maxine Waters. Maxine Waters comes off constantly as a nutcase and unstable with the mm-hmm. things that she says.
Right.
My question is, how long will it take for Ocasio-Cortez to burn out? It may be where the popular culture is right now, but popular culture can change like that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, ask Barack Obama.
Well, you're right.
I mean, he was, again, up until, you know, recently, he was still pretty much the head of the Democratic Party.
And now it is safe for a freshman member, a mm-hmm. brand new member right. of the House, to imply that Barack Obama is a murderer.
Right.
And there is no response or defense of the former president from any Democrat.
Right. Man.
That's what I mean. Popular culture changes extremely quick, doesn't it?
And it's only March of 2019.
Yep.
Wow.
Time.
The Right Wing Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I do want to play, because we had mentioned about the AFL-CIO saying that the Green New Deal and Ocasio-Cortez and sending letters to her and Senator Markey saying, look, this is unrealistic. It's not achievable. It's not realistic. As we've said all the time, it's impossible. It's childish mentality is what it is. Yesterday, though, if you ever wanted to understand what Ocasio-Cortez is, she's just become a troll. That's what she is.
Yep.
She'd become a not and trolls are usually people that are online, emails, whatever, in social media that just want to argue for the sake of argument's sake, that aren't trying to make any points whatsoever, that are or making extremely dumb points that are really unrelated to anything. This is Ocasio-Cortez questioning the Wells Fargo CEO. And just listen to how she goes with this on going after him for financing the caging of children. And then she brings up pipelines. Here we go. Here,
Mr. Sloan, why was the bank involved in the caging of children and financing the caging of children to begin with?
Now, that's trolling right there.
Because she's stating it as fact.
Yes. Here we go.
I don't know how to answer that question because we weren't.
So in finance, you were financing and involved in debt financing of CoreCivic and Geo Group, correct?
For a period of time, we were involved in financing one of the firms. We're not anymore, and the other. I'm not familiar with the specific assertion that you're making, but we weren't directly involved in that.
Okay. So these companies run private detention facilities run by ICE. Which is involved in caging children, but I'll move on.
I'm going to make the accusation and then move on.
Right.
that's trolling. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. She really doesn't want to have a discussion on it. She wants to make a statement, not discuss it, make the accusation, and then move on. And then she continues. This is just bizarre world that she goes into again.
Mr. Sloan, Wells Fargo was also an investor, and a major investor in the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL pipelines. They were prime investors and lenders to companies building these pipelines in defiance of Standing Rock Sioux's treaty rights to protect its water and sacred lands. They warned early on, the Lakota Sioux warned early on, that the pipeline was unstable and bound to leak. Despite that, it was built anyway, and it has leaked at least 5 times. And the Keystone XL in particular had one leak that leaked 210,000 gallons across South Dakota. Since Wells Fargo financed the building of this pipeline in an environmentally unstable way, why shouldn't the bank be held responsible for financing the cleanup of the disasters from these projects?
This is the same. By the way, this is the same mentality that the colleges promised if you went to our college that you could get a job.
Well,
so then we took out a private loan from the bank. And since we couldn't get a job because it was promised by the college that the bank is somehow responsible for forgiving the loan to students.
Well, okay. The bank issued a car loan to an individual who was responsible for drunk driving, and which ended up in someone else dying. Is the bank responsible?
That's the mentality. That's why we said this is just pure trolling here. Well, here's his response, because she's wrong on one major fact.
Which pipeline are you referring to?
Either. You know.
So we were not involved in the financing of the XL pipeline. We were one of the 17 or 19 banks that was involved in the financing of the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Okay, so Wells Fargo hasn't financed any company associated with the Keystone XL pipeline?
No, I didn't say that. I said we're not involved in financing that pipeline specifically.
Yeah.
So there you go. Just pure trolling.
Yep. All right. and that is exactly what you're going to get from hers, is the clueless approach. But see, she doesn't have to be accurate. All she has to do is throw things. She's the equivalent of a young child having a tantrum. That's what trolls are. They can't have the debate. They can't get you on anything, so they're just going to make it look like you're guilty of something.
And then it continued where, growing frustrated, he said, Ocasio Cortez talked over Mr. Sloan as he finished answering a question. Well, what about the cleanups from the leaks of the Dakota Access Pipeline? He said, I'm not aware of the leaks associated with the Dakota Access Pipelines that you're describing. So hypothetically, if there was a leak from the Dakota Access Pipeline, why shouldn't Wells Fargo pay for the cleanup since it paid for the construction of the pipeline itself? Because we don't operate the pipeline. We provide financing to the company that's operating the pipeline.
And here's the operative word, by the way, that she's wrong on. They didn't pay for anything. They financed a loan.
Yes.
They get their money back with interest. The companies who built the pipeline paid for the pipeline and have ownership. The finance company does not have ownership.
Well, I mean, this is again how the socialists think. That if you're anywhere along, in order for the government to get access to capital and to justify the morality of government controlling the capital, then anywhere along the line, this is what she's trying to lay out, anywhere along the line of financing, if I finance a company that does business with a company that does business with another company that breaks the law, I have broken the law and I have done something immoral. Therefore, government should control the capital all along that money line.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she's getting to, because it's just asinine.
Yeah, what I wonder is which bank was used in the transferring of money from the PAC to the person that is now one of the top people on her staff.
I would like that, too. And, boy, I would have loved if he would have responded with that.
Yep.
Look, if you'd like to talk about the regulators hitting our company with the $1 billion fine for forcing auto loan customers into unneeded insurance policies, go ahead.
We have ownership in that.
We have ownership in that. Here's what we've stated on that. I have no idea what you're talking about. And since we're on that, could you please explain the money trail of the PAC money in your campaign? Now, he wouldn't say that, but it would be great if somebody else would have brought that up. Wouldn't you have loved that?
Democrats, you're a member of the Democratic Party, are you not? Yes, you are. How many members of your party supported the Keystone Pipeline? You're a member of that party. You take responsibility, too.
Right.
If not, run as an independent.
Yeah, you're part of that. You're part of that party. That a number of members did support the Keystone pipeline, mm-hmm. and therefore, you have to take ownership. Too.
Right. You chose to run as a Democrat. No one forced you to do that.
By the way, that SUV that you were riding the other day takes fuel from the Keystone pipeline.
Right.
Therefore, you're partly responsible also for the leak.
You're responsible for global warming, in part. You're going to pay your share, too.
Yes. This is very easy to continue down this line.
It is. It's like karate.
We're fighting 14-year-olds.
Yeah. A 14-year-old I'd be afraid of. It's the 3-year-old.
Well, I mean, this is really getting to be too easy. And that's why I asked the question before. When will she burn out? You know, when will she burn out? And I think it's very important when we brought up the fact of, you know, in popular, there's the substance of politics, but there's also the popular culture of politics that we have seen rapidly move in the Democrat Party. And I think it's very important to bring up an Obama. Yeah. That Obama that was viewed as a deity. And you're saying, don't be ridiculous. Oh, we can just go to Evan Thomas, can't we? Was it D-Day of 2010? That Obama Obama is above everybody. He
hovers.
He's not provincial. He's hovered. He's godlike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean that those things were actually said. So from being godlike to winning the Nobel Peace Prize before he ever became president, to the adoration that existed around him, and then to the point where Skater Bob didn't want his endorsement last year, could care less about his endorsement, to the point now where Representative Omar implied that Obama is a murderer here in just the last couple of days. And do you get outrage from the Democrats? You get absolute silence from the pledge and from the Hollywood people and the songs. And we're going, Obama, whatever he wants. Oh, now we're going to make sure that we only flush our toilets once a day because Obama's a president and we need to save the planet. Remember that? Remember the pledge?
Now I'm dedicated.
Remember the songs that existed out there, the adoration that existed. Now a freshman Democrat can accuse him of being a murderer. And no one in the Democrat Party stands up behind him. That's how quickly pop culture moves. So my point is with Ocasio-Cortez. How long before she gets burned out where they say, Matt, you're no longer of any use to us?
Mm-hmm. Well, it can't last without something meaningful behind it.
Because the whole point is, what does she eventually accomplish?
And that's my point. You're going to have to go back and say, because still today, you'll have the left saying, oh, well, no, but, you know, he got Obamacare done. He got a lot of things done. Bill Clinton, everything that he signed, he wish he hadn't. But they still praise him. But they'll talk about those things in terms of one member of the House. If you're going to be that loud, you also have to walk the walk. You also have to bring something in terms of accomplishment. And here's the tell. If the Green New Deal were not just a resolution, but were a bill that would become law. Now, we know that it wouldn't pass the Senate. We know the president wouldn't sign it. Doesn't matter. How many Democrats would vote for it in the House? Make it something binding. And there's where you have at least some measurement on what she brings. Nobody cares about her appearance and wow, the stupid things that were said during South by Southwest. Or this display with this Wells Fargo CEO. You know, all of that happens is pretty much part of the whole rock star thing on the left. But eventually, a young rock star your last album was great. Man, your second album sucks. You better be able to deliver.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, they're finally doing something. Senate Republicans reintroduced a bill to make daylight saving time permanent. They did it last week.
Oh, good. I'm glad they're getting to the important things.
The bill cites several studies which has found it actually boosts our economy and reduces depression as well as crime. Do you remember? I forgot which show we were doing together, but we were doing one show together. Remember when they moved it? When they changed the months, they moved it, to March and then it November?
Mm-hmm.
To do whatever they were going to do, which I forgot what it was supposed to do. Save gas or something?
Something. Save the planet.
Save the planet or whatever?
Yeah.
And we said, what a bunch of hogwash. And no, everybody in Congress was behind it back then. Now, it's not so smart.
Right.
It's supposed to help the economy, save the planet.
You're not changing the hours in the day. the hours of sunlight that we're going to get.
The polar bears are now living longer.
Right, yeah.
They have a better quality of life.
Yeah.
Better fish to eat. I can make stuff up if AOC can make stuff up, why can't I?
There's an argument, you know, everybody has their own preference, but really there's no actual good reason for changing the clocks. Someone may say, well, if it's my lifestyle, I like it better because, great. You're not changing the hours in terms of the amount of sunlight you're getting in a day. If you want that, there's parts of Alaska you can move to. You know? I mean, other than that, you're not going to change anything. Yeah, we can change how the sunlight works for us. No, you can't.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. In the news this morning,
the parents charged today, despite already being able to give their children every legitimate advantage in the college admissions game, instead chose to corrupt and illegally manipulate the system for their benefit. We're not talking about donating a building so that a school's more likely to take your son or daughter. We're talking about deception and fraud, fake test scores, fake athletic credentials, fake photographs, bribed college officials.
Wow, that's federal prosecutor Andrew Lelling yesterday talking about the federal indictment that has accused dozens of wealthy parents, college coaches, and college prep executives in a nationwide college admissions scam. The U.S. attorney, Andrew Lelling, says parents who included actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin cheated to get their kids into prestigious schools. What a mind-boggling story this is from a variety of different angles, Eric. First off, the fact that Felicity Huffman is married to William Macy, and William Macy was in the courtroom, and I did notice that many in the media said the actor in Shameless,
mm-hmm. Yeah, where he plays a con man,
and then again,
he wasn't arrested. To be clear, he wasn't
right. He wasn't arrested, even though he was involved in setting up a lot. He was not actually arrested. Now, Lori Loughlin's husband, he was $1 million bond for him. William Macy was not, even though he was part of the conversations that were actually going on, apparently, according to some of the indictments. But he was in the courtroom. He was taking notes. And when a Fox News reporter asked if he would like to comment, he said no. That in itself, just to see William Macy in a courtroom and at this type of situation, I would have paid money to see.
Mm. And, you know, the question is, how far does this go? How big of a problem is this? How widespread? Because there are plenty of people with money, and they have names that you wouldn't know. I mean, that, in fact, is the case with some of those, according to the authorities that were involved here. But now take it to the level of, all right, a parent was willing to put $25,000 on credit cards in order to get their child special access. The point being is that if it was this involved and it went, according to the authorities, this went from 2011 all the way up until just last month, then if it was this widespread, that means there was that kind of market and demand for it. In other words, if you've got enough money, you can get your kid in the school and you don't have to donate a library or something to do it. So I do wonder how far this, how widespread this problem is.
Now, authorities have not responded as to why William Macy was not arrested.
Right.
The document stated that a cooperating witness met with Huffman and her husband, actor William Macy, at their Los Angeles home and explained to them that he controlled a testing center and could have someone secretly change their daughter's answers. The person told investigators a couple agreed to the plan. The judge asked Huffman, I'm not asking you to admit or deny the charges against you, but do you understand what the government claims you did? She replied, yes. When you see that, because that was the specific charge against them, Lori Loughlin's kid, that was just, that was mind-boggling in itself. Because what they did was they wanted to, and they paid $500,000 to pretend that their kids were in crew, that their daughters were in, you know, the crew, rowing, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
When they weren't, in order to get them into college, and I believe they paid, was it $500,000, was it? Yeah. Huffman paid $15,000, which he disguised as a charitable donation. Few people have already said, well, they're going to get, is the IRS going to get her? Look, if the feds are involved in it, if they put that as a charitable donation, the IRS will get them for it. Believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Federal prosecutors, in a case like this, I can guarantee you, they dot every I and cross every T. Been interesting when you've had federal prosecutors talk about if they're found guilty, what kind of jail time will they get?
Well, high-profile case. They spent a lot of resources, cases, each of them, but they spent a lot of resources. You can imagine a prosecutor that is looking to make an example out of celebrities and rich people in general.
Right, because...
Powerful people in general.
They were just the two people that you know.
Right.
There was a guy, what, heads a law firm?
Mm-hmm. He was the chairman of a high-profile law firm, and... He, according to the allegations, he donated $400,000 to a bogus charity, and that money was funneled to the then head coach of the of tennis there at Georgetown. Again, according to the allegations. But look at the amounts of money. I mean, there is... Unless you're delivering it in a duffel bag, leaving it under a bridge somewhere, there's a chain of events involving a number of people in order to make that happen. How is it that you believe you're going to get away with it? That's arrogance that I just can't imagine. That's stupidity. It goes beyond arrogance.
Well, you know, Lori Loughlin's husband, $1 million bond.
Mm-hmm.
For Felicity Huffman, it was $250,000, but they said the money, the amount of money actually increases the seriousness of the actual crime.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And because Felicity Huffman's was only $15,000 and Lori Loughlin's and her husband was $500,000, that they would probably end up doing more time. But the coaches that were involved in this or the testing centers or the consultant, or the people that actually gave the SATs. And by the way, they said that a lot of these parents actually got notes from therapists stating that their children needed to take the SAT or the ACT privately with a proctor because of whatever affliction they had.
Mm-hmm.
And those proctors were the ones that cheated and then changed the answers to ensure that these students got a higher SAT or an ACT on it. Now, many of those coaches and proctors and whoever was involved in it, the guy who had the one consulting company, they've all been charged with racketeering.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have multi-counts of racketeering that could be very serious jail time. We were reading Dan Abrams' Law and Crime, and one of the former prosecutors were saying that, for example, that those crimes were much more serious racketeering charges, but they still said that Lori Loughlin, if she decided to go to court and was found guilty on it, could get you know, over 40 months in prison because of it.
Yeah.
So you're talking 3 to 4 years of a prison sentence, and maybe 2 to 3 years, even if she came to some kind of deal on it.
Yeah.
And 18 to 24 months for Felicity Huffman she could possibly get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also wonder too. What they are investigators are looking at in terms of the schools involved, and the and how this was put together, right? Who in what position would have created the opportunity for this kind of crime and created that situation? And because when you talk about
the same thing, how do you get to the point of even dealing with these people or finding out that they exist?
Because at least in one case, you had someone asking one of those accused that was asking the person that was facilitating this, well, what does the school think about it? And the response was, no, the school doesn't know. The school doesn't know. And so you don't, if there is a tremendous opportunity, these huge, you know, gaps, holes where individuals can do this, they have that kind of influence, then you can bet that, especially when it comes to federal money going to universities, there's likely to be some kind of other move on the university level, and that is to ensure that there is a process, some kind of oversight, and maybe even changing the process of how students get on board and by what recommendation. You know, you and I were talking about the whole scholarship thing. That involves something very different, and a number of people are involved when it comes to
right.
those types of scholarships. And this wasn't about scholarships, but the point being is that there's a great number of people involved, a group of people involved in determining who is going to qualify for those scholarships. So when it comes to getting access to those schools, someone being getting accepted to that school, and you have one or two people making that decision, that's not a small thing. I mean, there's a reason they paid that kind of money, according to the allegations, anyway. There was a reason they were willing to pay that kind of money.
By the way, it's the
prestige, but where that exists, then there is an opportunity for a black market, which is essentially what you're seeing here, approach to a solution,
which is illegal. You asked the question, and we just touched the surface on this.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, I guess, is when you see that William Macy, the actor, was actually involved with his wife
mm-hmm.
on setting the whole thing up, there is a question as to why she was arrested and he was not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think federal prosecutors will eventually answer that question.
Well, I read where a number of experts were commenting on that, and basically it comes down to culpability. What do you have that really brings him into the actual crime? Was it just a series of questions and conversations? Did he write a check?
Did she write the check?
Did she write the check?
Right.
Did she transfer the money? Were they asking questions, or were they saying, hey, we want to do this and we know it's illegal, so we'd like you to help us do this? There's a difference. Because one's harder to prove that there is a conspiracy or they were conspiring to do something, and the other one is pretty clear that they're conspiring to do something illegal.
It would just be interesting to see it, what the federal prosecutors actually say.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were both talking to the person and they both had knowledge of it.
If they never charge him, they likely won't say anything about why they didn't.
Well, I guess reporters will ask the question. It'll be interesting to see if somebody eventually asks that question,
yeah.
whether it's on a news show mm-hmm. 5 years from now.
Yeah.
What will that response be as to why they went after her? What makes her culpable of the crime and not him if he knew about it and was involved in the conspiracy? Is it that she wrote the check, the actual check, because that she's charged with what? Fraud. mail fraud is part of it.
Yeah.
So if you send
so, what's interesting, she at Huffman and her spouse, although it doesn't name him, are spouses in quotations, made a, also in quotations, purported charitable donation of $15,000 to the Key Worldwide Foundation, a Newport Beach, California-based charitable organization, in February of last year, 2018, according to the affidavit. The contribution was made to, quote, participate in the college entrance exam cheating scheme. Again, these are the charges, allegations by the investigators and prosecutors, on behalf of her older daughter. Prior to the December 2017 SAT college entrance exam, the SAT is the most common exam, blah, blah, blah. Huffman later made arrangements to pursue the scheme a second time for her younger daughter before deciding not to do so, according to the affidavit. So the way the scheme worked, this is coming from USA Today, according to the affidavit, an individual identified as CW, that being cooperating witness, told Huffman and her spouse that he controlled a college testing center where her daughter could take the college SAT, and a third party would purport to proctor or monitor during the exam the daughter and secretly correct her answers afterwards. The cooperating witness has advised investigators that Huffman and her spouse agreed to the plan, again, according to the affidavit. The daughter took the test at the West Hollywood Test Center instead of at her own high school. According to the affidavit, another individual identified as CW2, cooperating witness 2, flew from Tampa to Los Angeles in December to proctor the SAT test. And that witness, the control or the cooperating witness number 2, told investigators that each time he was in L.A. to proctor an exam, he facilitated cheating either by correcting the student's answers after the test or by actively assisting the student during the exam.
Wow.
She ultimately scored a 1420 on the SAT.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The top U.S. trade negotiator says there won't be any agricultural trade agreement with China until the two nations reach agreement on structural issues like technology theft and forced tech transfer. Ambassador Robert Lighthizer telling the Senate Finance Committee Tuesday that those issues are being worked on detail by detail.
That is not to say that we've come to conclusion, because we haven't, but we're making headway on there.
But when it comes to what U.S. sector would have the most to gain from a U.S.-China trade deal, Lighthizer said it would be agriculture.
We sell them in a normal year, $18 or $19 billion worth of product, less last year for a variety of reasons. But they import a lot of goods from a lot of other places that they ought to be importing for the United States.
Meanwhile, he said he knows the tough financial situation many farmers are suffering right now, and if the U.S. can actually get a trade agreement with China and also with Japan.
I think there's a bright light on the horizon for agriculture, and that certainly is our objective.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. While the Republicans releasing some of Lisa Page's testimony, this is really interesting stuff. We haven't been able to get to that here so far tonight. We got to get to it because it again, it's something that opens up another door, and we'll get to that. Plus, the Brexit vote in Great Britain. What a mess!
Yeah,
I
don't even know where anybody goes in that situation. Honestly.
Neither do I.
I have no idea what the solution is.
Nope.
Here's your forecast.
A number of hazards are expected from a powerful storm system in the south. We started seeing the rain develop yesterday in the Four Corners region, and we'll see that system intensify today across the central plains. The severe thunderstorms connected with the system are part of a frontal boundary that'll be sweeping through western Texas today. From El Paso down to the Big Bend area, affecting portions of Interstates 20 and I-10 in the region. Then heavy rain today from eastern Texas will extend into Oklahoma, Kansas, right on up into the Great Lakes. So you'll definitely need the windshield wipers on I-35 north and south from Texas up to Minnesota today. Then along, of course, portions of I-80, I-70, I-40. Portions of I-80 in Nebraska and I-90 in South Dakota could potentially see some icing and mixed precip. A winter storm watch for the Denver area, deteriorating conditions as you move northward. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The vast majority of Americans have no idea what we're talking about. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks and appreciate you being here this morning. Okay, a couple of other stories we want to bring to you. This from the Washington Examiner. Former FBI lawyer Lisa Page testified last year that officials in the Bureau, including then FBI Director James Comey, discussed Espionage Act charges against Hillary Clinton, citing gross negligence, but the Justice Department shut them down. Newly released transcripts from Page's private testimony in front of a joint task force of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committee in July of 2018 sheds new light on the internal discussions about an investigation into Clinton's emails. This goes back to the FBI's mid-year exam investigation, which looked into whether Clinton committed crimes when she sent and received classified information on her unauthorized private email server while serving as Secretary of State. Comey cleared Clinton of all charges in a press conference on July 5, 2016. Page told the committee that the FBI did not blow over gross negligence. Responding to a question from Representative John Ratcliffe of Texas, Page testified the FBI, including Comey, believed that Clinton may have committed gross negligence. Well, in fact, he wrote it, as we remember.
Mm-hmm.
We, in fact, and in fact, the director, because on its face, it did seem like, well, maybe there's a potential here for this to be the charge. And we had multiple conversations with the Justice Department about charging her. Page further testified the Department of Justice put a stop to that. The Justice Department's assessment was that it was both constitutionally vague so that they did not actually feel that they could permissibly bring the charge. The specific statute being referenced deals in part with gross negligence and handling of national defense information, which Clinton came under scrutiny for possibly violating. Page said Comey and the FBI spoke to the Department of Justice about a gross negligence charge for Clinton multiple times, but the Department of Justice constantly pushed back on it. We had multiple conversations with the Justice Department about bringing a gross negligence charge, and that's, as I said, the advice we got from the department was that they did not think that it was sustainable. Ratcliffe then asked if the decision not to charge Clinton with gross negligence was a direct order from the Department of Justice. He asked the question, here it is, quote, when you say advice you got from the department, you're making it sound like it was the department that told you you're not going to charge gross negligence because we're the prosecutors and we're telling you we're not going to, end of quote, he said. Mm. Page responded, that's correct. When asked why the Department of Justice believed that it was unconstitutionally vague, she said, "I really don't know. They never explained it to us." Now, what this brings to the whole case is the fact that Loretta Lynch said she would let the FBI decide, and Page's testimony contradicts that. This throws into a complete shambles where Comey said he made the decision and he alone to do it. This changes that completely. Now, it's all based on the timeline, and I don't have the timeline of when all these things happen. But if the timeline was before July 5th, which one would assume it would have to be.
Well, yes. It wouldn't be the case that he would just, as he's prepping to go out and tell everyone what he found, say, "Well, yeah, I'm just going to make this decision myself."
Remember, that's what he said, that they would go. Remember, and she said, "I'll go along with whatever the FBI says." Mm-hmm. Well, what she is saying is the FBI wanted to charge, and it was the Department of Justice that directly pushed back and said no. So was Comey lying. Not Comey. I'm sorry, let me correct that. Was Loretta Lynch lying when she said we let the FBI make the decision on it, when the FBI didn't agree with the Department of Justice? They actually wished to charge her. And by the way, this goes back to what Eric and I talked about a long time ago, with the difference between the allegations against Donald Trump and even Hillary Clinton. We could specify down to the point of the Espionage Act, as she actually did in this testimony, what part of the Espionage Act they wanted to, you know, charge her with. And we have gone over that over and over and over again on the show. Many moons ago we did it. But there were specific allegations and a specific part of the law that if you read it, you say, yep, she broke it.
So if the Attorney General Lynch at that time was lying, it's also possible that Comey was lying in that he said he made that decision on his own.
On his own, yes. Later on in testimony, right. Yes. Exactly. Who's telling the
because
truth?
Because we looked at it and we said, okay, where is Sally Yates?
We asked that
Deputy
question.
Deputy Attorney General at the time, where is Sally Yates on
right.
this?
If Loretta Lynch recused herself
right.
because of the meeting, the tarmac meeting with Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. which now brings that into a whole new different light.
Right.
Was it Bill Clinton trying to tell Loretta Lynch something not to prosecute? Or was it Loretta Lynch telling him, you're going to be fine?
Everything's going to be good.
Was that even something that we thought it was not, where right. we thought it might have been, and the thought process to this point has always been, well, Clinton probably was trying to find out what was going on. Well, was it just the opposite? Was it Loretta Lynch attempting to tell him, you're going to be fine. Tell Hillary it's all going to be fine.
Right. And none of it added up. It's never added up. You look at how things would happen with the investigative arm being the FBI, the agency doing the investigation, wrapping up the investigation, and then saying, you know, we have turned it over with our recommendations and we will let the, at that time, Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, make the decision based on our recommendations and based on her own experience.
They didn't do that.
That's not what happened. Because that's, when you look at that, that's not even, again, there's really not a lot in that little equation.
Well,
it's not. It's actually part of the process. It was bizarre that you had the director of the FBI come out and say no reasonable prosecutor. Well, you're not a prosecutor. In this moment, you don't serve in the role of a prosecutor. You serve as the head of the FBI that did the investigation. Your work is complete. Now you can have recommendations and you can give those to the prosecuting arm, being the Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. But ultimately the decision would be there.
Well, remember after that, we got the source stories that there are people inside the FBI that just, you know, believe that Comey went against protocol, and all these experts were out there saying he went against protocol. He went against protocol.
Right.
Maybe he didn't go against protocol. Maybe he was just following the department. According to Lisa Page, it was the Department of Justice that pushed back and said they couldn't do it. Because remember, they said multiple times we approach the Department of Justice. Not once, but multiple times they approach the Department of Justice and they said, we think we have enough evidence to charge her under the Espionage Act. And the Department of Justice came back and said, no, you don't.
Right.
Well, that's not what we were told happened. We were told the Department of Justice was out of it completely, and this was Comey's decision and Comey's decision only.
Right, yes.
And then he overstepped his bounds in doing so, which, by the way, which was one of the justifications for Rod Rosenstein telling the president, you should fire him.
Right.
Well, is it all false? You have to ask that question after Lisa Page's testimony was released yesterday by Republicans. And Eric, it just keeps going drip, 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 drip.
And I wonder, too, I can't recall, was Comey asked directly? I think he was. I think he was asked multiple times because he gave testimony. He testified a few different times on Capitol Hill. But I believe he was asked more than once, were you directed in any way, one way or the other, from the Attorney General's office? I'm going to have to go back and find the transcript, but I believe that question was asked more than one time, and I believe his answer was no, that this was my decision. I don't think he said, my point is, I don't think he just necessarily volunteered that out there without being asked directly. I think he was asked that directly, and I think it was multiple times.
Remember, the Comey's original draft was the gross negligence, which was then changed.
Right, because gross negligence, that's a crime.
That's a crime.
Extremely careless is not.
Well, that's and that takes it beyond just what we knew about, you know, the first draft. This now takes it with Lisa Page's testimony. This was an active discussion that the FBI brought up to the Department of Justice multiple times. They were going to the Department of Justice saying, we need to prosecute her. We believe we have a case. Yep. And they shot back, no, you don't have a case. Not once, but multiple times. I don't know whether multiple times means twice or three times or four times, but the FBI was looking at this and saying, she should be charged. And the Department of Justice was coming back every time, according to Lisa Page, and saying, no, this blows so much of the narrative that we have been told out of the water if Lisa Page's testimony is true. And it's been now a couple of years, and then you wonder, what does Trump have? What do the Republicans still know? How far is this going? How far this going to go? Because it continually goes in the direction. You know, whether we talk about collusion, whether we talk about wrongdoing, nothing ever leads to Trump when it comes to the actual election. It keeps going back to those who served in the Obama administration. Every single time it goes back to them.
Yeah.
And this information, which I look at as a significant revelation that came out yesterday, mainstream media, crickets.
Nothing.
Brexit. Quickly here, we only got a couple of moments, but we'll talk about this more. But
yeah.
There's not much to talk about because there's a no deal vote on how to exit Brexit.
Right. Well, they now go with a vote of, do we proceed without a no deal, right? Which would be Brexit, but you have no deal with the EU, the remaining European Union.
No trade deals,
no
nothing.
Trade, no trade, no. How nothing. Do we, you know, how do we coordinate, you know, the border crossings and what do we recognize and what do we not recognize? And if there is a vote to delay it, then they could go back and see if they can get a deal. In other words, delay it past the end of this month. Brexit's supposed to happen at the end of this month, but delay it. I don't know how far do you delay it? How far you want to go? Because now you're going in the head of the EU has been saying, sorry, this is the deal. we're not going to make another deal. We're not going to recognize any other deal. They made a deal. If they get out, this is the deal they made. And so do they vote to move on without a deal? Ugh, what a mess.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And finally, Nicholas Sandman and his lawyers, the Covington High School student, have officially sued CNN for $275 million.
Wow.
$75 for destroying his reputation.
$75 million.
What did I say?
$75.
Oh, $75 million. $75. Mm-hmm. $75 million for damaging his reputation. Mm-hmm. $200 million in punitive damages. You add that with the Washington Post lawsuit, and what are we up to now? $525 million?
Yeah, right. Likely a settlement in both. I don't see them taking this. I don't see them taking this to court. You really don't want that image of going in and battling a young student. You don't want, especially when their lawyer is going to take you to task every single day. You don't want that playing out. You really don't.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.